The Forward Thinker Show is available wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, it's Coral, and welcome to The Forward Thinker Show, the podcast where we share the stories and expertise of global leaders in business and technology. Today, we're joined by Robert Hacker, co-founder and director of Startup FIU, former CFO and COO of One Laptop Per Child, an international social venture started at the MIT Media Lab. He built a billion-dollar company in Indonesia and author of two books on traditional and social entrepreneurship strategies. So basically, he's done a lot of things, and he's basically like a hustle bro, but like 10x that. How are you doing today, Hacker?
I'm doing fine, Coral. I'm doing fine. This is our first, I'm going to call it commercial venture together.
Commercial venture, yeah.
How many of my courses have you taken at FIU?
Oh, yeah. Also, he's my professor. I've taken him for 3 semesters now.
Right.
Yeah. So in the Honors College, you can pick who your professors are, and you get to choose like a variety of interdisciplinary courses. And I just so happened to choose the only course. It's Startup FIU.
She keeps forcing me to come up with new courses so she can take me again.
I don't think I'll have enough credits, but yeah, that's why we're doing this. So I want to start off with, I always ask this question to all of my guests. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Okay, I grew up in upstate New York.
Oh.
Near the Canadian border.
Oh my God.
It is exactly what people think America is, or mm-hmm. at least what America was.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Everybody's just sort of hardworking, very patriotic, simple lives. All right? And, you know, it's the model that built the country.
Mm. So was that like Buffalo or?
Syracuse.
Syracuse. Oh. Right.
Yeah. In fact, my entire family practically all went to Syracuse University. My mother, my sister, my brother, they all went to Syracuse.
Wow. You had a company in Asia, and it's a billion dollar company. I noticed online there was nothing like public about it. Could you share the name of it? Or?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The company is called Matahari, which in Bahasa Indonesian language means the eye of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it was founded by a Chinese husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the wife was the merchant.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that picked and designed and produced the merchandise. And the man was sort of the visionary, the motivator. He thought he knew a lot about real estate, which maybe wasn't as correct as he thought.
Mm-hmm.
But they built it up to about $40 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined them, and I took it from $40 million to a billion.
Jesus Christ.
It was the largest retail company outside of Japan in all of Asia. Because China hadn't boomed yet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's absolutely insane. And it seems like after that, over the years, you've done other projects, but something right now that you're focused on is sort of giving back to, you know, not only like the community, but to like young people here at FIU. And so I recently read in one of your Medium articles that every company is a software company. Could you explain what that means?
Sure. I became involved in software in the 80s.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, working with the Japanese, I was doing technology licensing for the Japanese to acquire software because they didn't understand how to write software for computers.
Mm-hmm.
I never did find out why they thought that, but they just acknowledged we need American software.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching the Japanese specify what they wanted and what industries and all of that launched my study of software.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then in Indonesia, the computer technology continued to advance in terms of my development. because, for example, we had all of our stores across 10 time zones linked by satellite to capture the data out of the cash registers. Why did we have to use satellite? Because the phone system was so bad. All right. So here I was collecting data using a satellite system in the third world when most of the first world wasn't doing it. All right.
But innovative hacker.
But it's all this gradual building on some understanding of, you know, computers and software and network technology. And so when you look today at the modern corporation, all right, Jensen Huang describes it that you have to have two companies. You have to have a software company and you have to have an industrial company. Now, the industrial company is all about the matter and the manufacturing and delivery and supply chain. But all of that is defined by your artificial intelligence-based augmented collective intelligence, right? Which is the cyber-physical union. And that is a dramatic change from where the Japanese were in the 1980s to where we are today. And the world you're going to live in is going to be that world of two corporations in one.
Yeah. I know that Starbucks, apparently they make more money on their gift cards, like the virtual gift cards, than on their coffee itself. That it's like, it's crazy that they're more like a digital financial company than a coffee company at all.
Well, that example, you know, there are many examples like that. I mean, it may not be quite to the same scale, but look at all the money that Apple makes off of their application store. Right. It's not manufacturing. It's not hardware. It's barely computers.
It's all software.
Yeah, it's all software.
Yeah. And I guess, but like, I'm kind of scared because we're going to need less people to make software than hardware.
You know, as we talked about in class today, you may have been setting up, so you might have missed that part of class, but this notion that task-oriented software is going to take over and play a much more prominent role than it's ever played. And so it's just a question of what tasks do you want to apply the artificial intelligence to? Do you want it to write software, or do you want it to critique your writing for a book, or do you want it to produce dog images? It's really just a question of what you want done. It's going to happen.
Yeah, it is. And I guess something that I guess that AI can't create is sort of that insight. And that's something you always talk about. Could you explain what an insight is?
I think the way to understand an insight is that we know from subjects like physics and math that there are fundamental concepts that are the foundation and underlie every discipline. All right. I mean, the joke is, if it's not physics, everything else is chemistry. All right. It's sort of a play on the notion that you have physics, you have chemistry. If you understand that, you can understand anything else. Right. And so when we look at, for example, National Science Foundation, and they talk about innovation, you know, the production of original, novel, unique ideas, they say where you look for those is at the frontiers, all right, of science, the frontiers of engineering. And that frontier between science and engineering is what we call deep tech, all right, which means we're evolving the science, but not yet are we so far along that we can apply engineering principles to make it into prototypes and commercialize it. All right, so think of it as frontiers. How do we how do we redefine that frontier? Mm-hmm. That's the simple definition of insight.
And it sounds like engineering sort of always, I've noticed that like computer science and like the tech world is always infused into like entrepreneurial innovation sphere. I don't know why they're so correlated because, you know, sometimes when like a normal person, like my people who aren't into tech, when they think about entrepreneurship, they think about like, oh, I want to open up a store, open up a flower shop, open up a bakery, a restaurant. But then in here, I learned that like what you said earlier, that every company is a software company. So you're always going to need like tech eventually. Like it's like a, I don't know if tech is like a disease or something, but it's like everywhere.
Yeah. One of the distinctions that I always draw mm-hmm. is between small business mm-hmm. and entrepreneurship. Mm. I have nothing against small business. Mm-hmm. It's just that what interests me is entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship for me mm-hmm. is innovation at scale. Mm. All right. And it's finding the innovation that is suitable, that solves a big enough problem mm-hmm. that you can scale it to $1 billion or $6 billion in revenue. Mm-hmm. That's what kind of gets me up in the morning. That's what I'm trying to teach to you and the other students.
You know, software is the best way to scale a company. Like if you have to think about like a brick and mortar restaurant, there's so many costs to it to like expand it. But when you talk about solving a problem that people have with software, it's like you can make money even faster. Like look at Uber. Like if you look at Uber, they were able to scale massively. Of course, there was like some bumps in the road, but it's not like they were. If they were like a car manufacturing company, it'd be way different.
NFX, which mm-hmm. is a venture capital firm, mm-hmm. one of the very best writers on entrepreneurship. They did a study that showed that 70% of the stock market value in a particular period in recent history was all attributed to software as a service, SaaS mm-hmm. companies. Mm-hmm. 70% of the total value increase mm-hmm. was from SaaS. Mm-hmm. That is the proof of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're just sort of transitioning to yet the next implementation of computer science and computation.
You watch tech grow like over the years because you know you're much experienced than I am. That's the word I will say.
But
in your experience, like teaching like younger people, like we grew up with technology. I remember in like elementary school. And, like, they told us that, like, oh, we're not using pen and paper anymore. We're going to have laptops now. Because, like, I came from the Dominican Republic, and they used Starfall, which is a software company that teaches children English and, like, phonics. And so I learned English through a computer program. Like, that was, like, one of the methods that they used. And so for me, like, since I was a toddler, like, the software has been a part of my life. And so I guess based on your like experience teaching, you know, unique perspectives, frameworks to like young students, what do you think like Gen Z? So Gen Z is like, I think it's like under 25. Do you think that they would be better equipped for software entrepreneurship? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that growing up with the technology is a mm-hmm. wonderful advantage. I'm a little bit concerned about the bias that they have. Mm. All right. I don't find as many students as I would like, you know, avid readers on artificial intelligence, for example. Mm-hmm. So what I would normally say to a computer science undergraduate, mm-hmm. all right, if you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to be an entrepreneur in the computer science space, mm-hmm. I would recommend that you go and you get a job at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. All right. Microsoft will teach you in 2 years wonderful introduction to fundamentals of software business. Mm. Nobody does it better than Microsoft. Some people do it as well, but go and work at Microsoft or go and work at a late stage startup.
Mm.
All right. So they're not yet public, but they're very big and they're established. They will also teach you the same good concepts. And you do that for 2 years or 3 years. Then probably you go to work in a software startup.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a different set of skills. Then you're approaching the point where I would think you're well enough experienced to consider doing your software startup.
Mm.
All right. So I think, you know, unless you're Bill Gates, you know, quote unquote, you don't graduate from FIU and build Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not a comment about the FIU students, but it's mm-hmm. a comment about 20-year-olds
yeah.
across the world. You know, Bill Gates was a bit of an exception.
Yeah. I guess you mentioned earlier that we have some advantages, like, because we grew up with the technology. Do you think we have other unique perspectives that we can bring to the table?
I think the other perspective that you bring to the table is the problems in the world are becoming more and more complex.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The natural and the man-made systems are converging in ways that mm-hmm. we never anticipated.
Yeah.
Which is creating either much more severe problems or new problems or both.
Mm-hmm.
I think that your generation has much more of a social awareness.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What I would like to see is I would like to see the, call it the capitalist spirit,
mm-hmm.
modified to reflect the social awareness.
Mm.
All right. So what I always say is, I hope that in 20 years, we no longer need to talk mm-hmm. about social entrepreneurship.
Mm.
Because the social part hasn't been embedded by you Gen Z people
mm-hmm.
so well
mm-hmm.
that entrepreneurship by definition comes with a social awareness and a designed, mm-hmm. purposeful social impact
mm-hmm.
as part of the company, the culture, the values, mm-hmm. the strategy.
Mm-hmm. I guess I was always confused on like your social entrepreneurship and like regular entrepreneurship and like why it's like quote unquote better, because like when you talk about like social entrepreneurship, I thought you were talking about like not making a nonprofit or something like that.
Well, an awful lot of mm-hmm. people think that social entrepreneurship is sort of nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In fact, when I did the project at mm-hmm. MIT, they brought me in
mm-hmm.
to convert the project from a donative model
mm-hmm.
to the sale of the product to the governments, who then gave mm-hmm. it for free mm-hmm. to the children. See, I think that social entrepreneurship and traditional entrepreneurship
mm-hmm.
is just the difference in what problem
mm-hmm.
do you want to solve.
Mm.
All right. The purpose of a business is to create value
mm-hmm.
and then to capture value.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So when we look at social entrepreneurship and traditional entrepreneurship, we're really just talking about who's going to capture the value. The user, the customer, whatever you want to call the person,
mm-hmm.
or the shareholders and the company.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really talking about cash flow management mm-hmm. and distribution of benefits.
But like, does social entrepreneurship only have to be like positive? Like fixing problems that are like positive, or
I'm not sure I understand.
So like fixing problems that like just like would good look good on paper, or would it or does it have to be actual problems?
I will refrain from a lecture on cynicism.
Okay.
I think that you make a very good mm-hmm. you make a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
There's an awful lot of people that talk about their social impact, and it's really just smoke.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I would hope that your generation, you know, if we're going to quote unquote do away with social and entrepreneurship because the social is embedded in the entrepreneurship, I guess I should clarify my statement and say I expect real impact, not cosmetics.
Yeah, not like, oh, this is an app for you to find the best clothes for your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not it.
No.
I guess I wonder, because you said, like, you want to, like, we want to, like, embed social entrepreneurship into the business that you're building, more specifically, software business. What kind of mindsets and frameworks do you believe Gen Z entrepreneurs or Gen Z aspiring entrepreneurs should have?
Well, I think that you first, you build your company, then you think about how is that company going to have positive social impact. Now, if the answer is there is no social impact, then go back to plain piece of paper, start again. All right. But you see, I think that you can have a for-profit company making cars, but have a social purpose of training children, you know, that need help in elementary school, and you fund that, right? It doesn't have to be locked into cars, right? It can be whatever you want it to be. And that flexibility is a bias that most people don't have. You know, they think, well, if I'm doing steel manufacturing, I have to do X. So I think that's where you have to keep an open mind, right? You could just give the money to somebody who you think is a good organization for social impact, like Rockefeller Foundation, right? You could just give it. Secondly, you could have your product itself solve the problem. Thirdly, you could make a profit and take that profit and specifically use it for a social problem. I've been working with this corporation in New York, which is very, very well known financial institution, and they have a foundation. And the foundation's purpose is to create career-ready university graduates. And I think that's a wonderful objective.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I both know what university students are like.
Yeah.
You know, what their strengths are, quote unquote, what are their weaknesses. And this corporation, which is actually the Blackstone Group, is focused on career readiness. They may have some other, you know, social programs, but I'm aware of the one they do around career readiness. And I think that's a perfectly responsible program.
I was actually wondering if we could talk about that as well, about like the careers, because you said that, you know, the things that you should do in like when you're young is like first get experience somewhere. And I think for CS students, it's probably getting experience like in software is going to be kind of different because the world is becoming different. You know, with AI right now, I think that it's going to be more, I think computer engineering and data science are going to be more critical than CS. Because like you said, like CS could like, I mean, like software could just, we can make software that makes like the menial tasks. Actually, in 2021, Biden, he signed Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act dedicating $1.7 trillion into infrastructure into the U.S., which includes chip manufacturing.
Right.
Chip manufacturing back into the U.S. and also investments into electric vehicles. So there's obviously more federal spending in the chip manufacturing hardware space. And now with, like, the whole thing with NVIDIA talking of making more specialized chips, I feel like there's going to be a need for more people with that hardware knowledge in the future.
100% agreed.
Yeah.
I think you're reading the market really well.
Yeah.
You've been an excellent student in my three classes. No, I think that this is, see, that's an insight. Yeah. You know, you were asking me, how do you find insights? You found an insight by analyzing the situation, bringing your expertise to bear, and looking for opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, when Jensen Huang says that computer equipment is is the big growth area that's coming.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty good company to be in.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, the government spending a lot of that money in this area is, you know, a wonderful, you know, it's not a coincidence, but it is a coincidence.
It's an indicator.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is definitely, I wonder, because, like, because I'm kind of conflicted on topics like this, because it's like, okay, yes, like a software business could scale or whatever, but like the future is coming more hardware based because the software is getting automated.
Your question makes me realize something that I hadn't quite put together before.
Mm-hmm.
If we say that, you know, this advances in AI and the computer equipment to reach its potential is the key characteristic of the fourth industrial revolution.
Oh.
If we go back and look at the third industrial revolution, which was the launch of computing, what drove that revolution was, again, the advances in the equipment, right? Yeah. We had big mainframes that were as big as this floor in the building, and we advanced all the way to better computing in our hand.
Yeah.
Right? So your instinct to be following the equipment again is a very good instinct. Remember during your lifetime the following point. Whenever we change the scale of measurement, there's a huge opportunity. All right? So you think about it. When I started computing, we were barely in megabytes. And then we went to gigabytes. And now I think we're up to, what, zettabytes?
Something like that, yeah. Right.
And in your lifetime, we may even go past that. And when that happens, I can guarantee you we'll be in the next industrial revolution. And my guess is it'll be quantum computing that enables us to process information on that new scale. All right. So your daughters can pursue computing equipment just like their mother will. All right.
Well, I'm not in hardware. Like, I'm not studying hardware or computer engineering. But I am very jealous of them right now because they do have that. They are going to get that intellectual advantage that is going to set them up for that fourth industrial revolution right now.
Right, but, you know, I've had lots of students come out of startup FIU and get jobs, which I think are very modern jobs, and their role is to be between the customer and the geek. So it's a new kind of position in product development. All right, sort of like the interpreters. Well, who's going to interpret for the computer engineers building the equipment? All right, my guess is it's going to be people like you that understand the users who are going to help the computer engineers to find those products that become the billion-dollar solutions. All right. So in keeping with the fine traditions of startup FIU, you know, that you may end up translating for the geeks.
Yeah, maybe.
Which is a very valuable position, right?
Yeah. But you know, I don't like to like think in terms of like a job. I just like to think in terms of like I'm more of a project-based person. Like, I want to see projects go through and, like, I want to help them get better. Like, for example, like I could do jobs that are, like, I like to call them, like, postalita, which is just, like, postalita is, like, I just pose and, like, I have a title and then that's it. Very, like, put it, not, I wouldn't say like political, but like, yeah, just like I just post, have a photo, have a title, and put it on my LinkedIn. But I really like working with like a small group and then helping them grow. Like, for example, with like blockchain at FIU, when they were like, I was there at like when they were just starting, and then seeing them grow and like knowing that I had impact in that growth, like I felt much better than when I was doing like, I think I was doing like a job for like the school and they gave me this fancy title, but then like I quit 3 weeks in because I didn't feel like I was giving enough.
But you know, listening to you describe what you like to do, when I came out of business school, I basically had two choices. I could do investment banking or I could do consulting. Both were very popular back then for business school graduates. And I went with a consulting firm. And I spent 2 years doing projects around the world, all right, in small teams that were very important projects, all right, and learned, you know, 10 times more than I learned in business school in those 2 years. And maybe what you ought to do is you ought to test consulting and see whether or not, you know, it provides a livelihood that's kind of responsive to your need. Because for sure you'll get variety in one of the big firms like a McKinsey or a BCG or Anderson, right? And, you know, may not be a bad alternative. I have former students that work for consulting companies. And they seem to be quite happy. And the variety and the pace at which you learn is probably unparalleled because you've got so much variety.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think that's sort of like what you learn here. Like Startup FIU is like a space for FIU students to really explore that, you know, interdisciplinary learning. And I guess for young college students, that's something that's definitely needed right now, because outside of this, all we learn is like, go to school, get a job. That's it. Well, but over here, I feel like it's just like, it's so different that I've been stuck here for three semesters.
Well, we're trying to attract people exactly like you, because what what I always say about Startup FIU is we're going to teach you what you're not going to learn anywhere else at FIU, and we're going to prepare you for the future that you're going to live in. Those are the two simple premises, values of Startup FIU.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Hacker, for coming onto the podcast. I'm going to give you a space to sort of promote anything that you'd like, and also how people can reach you so that they can pick your brain a little bit more.
Well, I would like everyone to think about the quality of thought and the professionalism that Coral brought to today's podcast. And I would very modestly suggest that we're trying to attract to Startup FIU more people like Coral, more people that are very intelligent, not afraid of multidisciplinary thinking, who want to do something different that has a positive social impact for the world. And we even tolerate and encourage entrepreneurship as the means to get to that social impact. So my closing commercial is for Startup FIU. And remember, we do want to teach you what you're not going to learn anywhere else at the university or anywhere else in Miami. And equally important, we want to prepare you for the world you're going to live in. So whether you're in the community, you're here at the university, you could even be a PhD student, we welcome everybody. 1 week we had two Fulbright scholars. I thought that was amazing.
All right. So you've had alumni from YC Combinator as well.
Oh, yeah. We've had YC people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not afraid of those people. We welcome them. And, you know, I always say that on Wednesdays, the smartest group of people in all of Miami are the people that come to Hacker Nation, which is a fixture at Startup FIU every week. Thanks, Coral.
Yeah, and for those who don't live in Miami, you can always look up Robert Hacker on Medium. He has Medium articles, and he also has two books. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Forward Thinkers Show.